Okay, today we're discussing what's known as the subject matter of Pesel Micha, literally the statue, the idol of Micha. But this itself will be of great controversy, as we will see. Let's look at chapter 17. It says, "Vayhi ish mehar Ephraim ushimo Michayahu." Does anyone want to suggest what the name Michayahu means? What does Michael mean?
Who
is like God, right? It means the same thing, who is like God. So it sounds like this individual is a certain person who by his name indicates that he believes in, of course, one God and our God. And everything's nice and simple and going forward. Okay, now look what it says next. Vayomer l'imo, elef u'me'ah ha'kesef asher lukach lach, v'at alit gam amart bozni hinei ha'kesef iti ani lekach tiv, v'tomer imo baruch b'ni l'ashem. So, it was said to his mother, the 1,100 silver coins, which you had taken and apparently had been stolen from you, and that you had cursed that person. So he says, here is the money that was stolen. I stole it. Okay, the son says, I stole the money. And she responds, Baruch b'ni l'Hashem, blessed be my son to the Lord. Why? Because he sinned. Okay, but he admitted his sin. He came back. He admitted that he stole it. He gave it back. Now, in that situation, you can either tell your kid, that's it. You're going to your room. You're going to be punished. Or you might take it like she's saying and say, okay, you made a mistake, but I'm glad you realize that. I'm glad you can come and talk to me, right? When you made a mistake, when you did something wrong, you shouldn't be afraid of that. That's what she said. Okay, Baruch b'nai l'Hashem, b'bres b'ni l'Hashem, bless my child to the Lord. Okay, going on. So far, everything's nice and normal and quiet. Vayashev et elef u'me'ah kesef limo. So he returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. Vatomer imo, and his mother said, Hakdesh higdashti et hakesef l'ashem miyadi l'bni lasot pesel u'masecha v'yata ashivenu lach. So apparently she had previously sanctified this money, put it aside in order to serve God. So then it was stolen, but it had already been consecrated to serve God. So she said, so I'll give it back to my son, and he'll use it to serve God. She returned the money. The money was returned to the mother. She took 200 of the silver pieces that she had, and she gave it to a silversmith. So she therefore took the pieces, and the silversmith created a figure, an idol, we might say, a molten idol, okay, and it was put into and was placed into the house of Michayahu.
Is there any commentary? Originally, the mother had set aside all 1,100 pieces of silver for the purpose of serving Hashem, and then she separates 200 pieces from the other.
You're right. The Radak says that the 200 pieces of silver were the cost that that you had to pay the silversmith. That was the 200. That was separated from the 1,100. And the 900 was put over toward all the necessary ritual items. So, okay. Then it says, and we'll go back, V'yaish Micha. Who is Ha'ish Micha? This seems like Michayahu, right? But his name has been shortened. V'yaish Micha. So now he's called Micha. Lo Beit Elohim. He had a what? Sounds like a house of God. Like we call synagogue a Beit Elohim. You call a Beis Medrash. It was a house of God that he had. Vayas Ephod. So he made a certain garment that we know from that was worn by the priests from the Torah. Utrafim. And he made icons. And he either installed or Rashi says it's related to the idea of the Meluim, or he had sacrifices brought through his one of his sons, and that one son became for him the priest of the Beit Elohim, the priest of the house of God. The Kohen, right? He became the priest. Now, you have any problems with this so far? How does this start, and now what happens that it shifts? Can anyone relate to that?
I don't know.
How does it start, though? How does it start? His name means what? What's it mean?
Like
who is like God? Okay, so he believes in God, obviously. He believes in God.
Right? Not being like God.
Okay, what's that? And his mother, but his mother had the money and she was going to put it consecrated toward God, Hashem. Okay, everything's fine. And then, first of all, then what does the mother do? She goes, and what does she do?
She makes an idol.
She makes an idol. What's going on? I thought you said you believe in Hashem. You see, you believe in one God. And then the money gets taken to this person, and he does so. Then they make paraphernalia, it sounds like, for a temple. Then he's called Aish Micha. Now, why do you think the name is now? Can you see changed to Micha? Why?
It's not a house of God.
It's not a house of God. It's not like an house of idols. What do you mean? You can't go by the name Michayahu. Who's like God? What do you mean who's like God? You're showing that you could care less about God. You're making all these things that have to do with idol worship. Okay, and now you're appointing your own Kohen. Well, what is this? What do you mean you appoint the Kohen? God appoints the Kohen. What do you mean you appoint a priest? You're God appointing these priests and setting everything up like you have some temple there or something? This thing is crazy. What's going on here? Just the whole thing just starts so strangely from a guy believing in one God, and then suddenly it seems like we're on the route to idols. Which is it talking about? Now, let me just point out, by the way, by way of introduction, that the very first Rashi on this essay here, or this event, says, "Vayhi ish Mehar Ephraim," there was a man from the Har of Ephraim, "Apo pishnichtavu shtei parshiot halalu b'sofa sefer," even though this, and what will be known as the Pelegish of Giva, which will come later, were both written at this point, at the end of the book of Judges, he says still, "B'tchila rashoftim haya bimei Atanel ben Kenaz." Really, this is not its proper place. It was really meant to be put at the very way back at the beginning of Shoftim. This is not the place, and he even quotes a pasuk from later on that says, because the Pesel Micha that we're talking about being made here, it says later that actually existed from far before this. Okay, so it wasn't just made here. Apparently it already existed, but okay, that's not my main concern. But why do you think, and maybe you would know, why would it be that it really took place much earlier, all this, it's being placed at the end? So the Gemara says, and the Midrashim say, that it's because if it would have been at the beginning, right after Yeshua conquers the land, and some we have Shoftim, so right after the Jews get into their land, suddenly, oh, already they're making idols. What? I don't know. What is going on here? God gave them the whole land to drive the idolaters from it, to wipe out the idolaters, and they come and they immediately make idols. What a terrible people this is. So instead, according to this view, the Gemara says and the Medrash says, they push it later, later on in Shoftim, and say, okay, at least they got into the land. Maybe they were picking up on some of the vibes that the other nations were involved in. So eventually this led them to something like this. But it shouldn't be thought that they were necessarily, the minute they got in, so suddenly they start worshipping idols. Oh, that would be such a terrible statement about Kol Yisrael. So consequently, that's why it was put toward the latter part of the book. All right, that's what says in Eliyahu Rabbah. Okay, now, some other issues here that come up. So we have this notion of he's worshipping God, he's not worshipping God. He's worshipping God. He has an idol. Does this bring anything to mind where you maybe had such a situation in Tanakh? The Egel Azav, the golden calf. How so? How so?
Depending on how you interpret this.
Okay, right. So there's a debate about the golden calf where we may just presume it's idolatry. There's a big debate. The Ramban, for example, says it was not idolatry. It was not idolatry. The Jewish people just wondered what happened to Moshe. They lost their leader. They wanted another leader. So they thought this thing they would create, whatever represented, we discussed this before in Shul, but they thought that this thing would be their leader. They did not really want to worship it. They just wanted a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that was a terrible mistake, okay? But that was not, according to the Ramban, that was not a Avodah Zarah. That was not idolatry, all right? They were using an intermediary in order to serve God. The Rambam, I'm not saying the Rambam holds this in the case of the golden calf, but you may know the Rambam says in the laws of Avodah Zarah, some of you may remember, that originally everyone believed in one God. And then people came to believe in many gods. Now, how did that happen? How did that happen? Anyone recall what the Rambam says? Yeah.
That the people felt unworthy. How can we have the chutzpah to speak directly to Hashem? We need an intermediary.
Right.
And so they would use the sun as an intermediary or the wind as an intermediary, originally remembering that they were representatives of Hashem. But over time, people forgot about the end result and ended up praying directly to Avodah Zarah.
Correct. So you had that thing already in existence from time immemorial almost, that you have a notion of we have to go through something in order to get to the great God, which we still have today in Christianity. In order to get to God, you have to go through the Son. You can't get the S-O-N, right? You can't go directly to Him in a sense, and whoever doesn't go through the Son can't go to Him according to many views. You have to go through some type of intermediary, which is why the Rambam, I think, holds that really Christianity is idolatry. He says clearly, as opposed to other mainly in the Ashkenazic world, that it's not idolatry. Excuse me, they say it's not. The Rambam says it is idolatry because I think to him it just is a re-engagement with that prior process of trying to serve God through intermediaries, which led to idolatry and which was eventually idolatry. So we have such a model where someone in a sense can be worshiping God and yet he's doing it through the means that are statues and the like. So here, I'm just saying the question is, you could read this simply and say, okay, he believed in one God, and somehow he's messed up, and he thinks that you go through this God by using, like the Canaanites, he's there in their land now, maybe he's picking up on some of their items, you should use a statue, you should use this, you should use that. Okay, so he's in error, but maybe he's not actually worshiping idols. After all, it's called Beit Elohim, a house of God. He's appointing a Kohen. It sounds like he's kind of mobbing himself after the structure in the Chumash. So it seems like that's maybe what he's involved in. On the other hand, you could say, no, nothing doing. He said that this is absolute idolatry. It says it's Beit Elohim. They interpret that to mean, those who want to see it from this view, Beit Elohim means the house of mighty ones. He's calling it, don't forget, Elohim can mean various things in the Torah. Elohim can mean the mighty ones. So here it means that he established a house for the mighty, which refers to idolatry. And he's getting his pet objects of worship and making them, and this is a pure house of idolatry. And most, no doubt, lean to the fact that it is absolute idolatry that he's engaged in. Okay, and again, that's why he loses his name, which is first identified with his character as being one who believed in God, and now he no longer does that. And again, this is kind of the backdrop to what we'll be looking at. It says in the Torah itself, right, that God will make His Shechina, His presence dwell, b'makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha l'shaken shemo sham, in the place where God will choose to put His presence there. And then you have the Kohanim and the sacrifices. It's not up to you to choose. I'm going to choose. Now we know from prophecy that Shiloh was one example of a place which was a high place where things could be offered, where sacrifices could be offered before the temple was actually established in Jerusalem. Once it was established, then you could not serve anymore in what we call the Bamot, on the high places. Only in that one place. And this was done specifically, by the way, to counteract the idolaters who believed, again, because there are many gods, the river God, the mountain God, so there can be many places where you worship Him. But we believe in one God, as the Rambam says, so therefore, the idea was you have one place to serve the one God. Okay? So, per se, that would have been an issue itself, you know, what gives him the right to do this, but more than that, he's putting idols in there, it seems. So, that certainly is problematic.
This is probably, maybe it's the way to understand this, is this event occurred before the religion was really canonized.
Right.
And yet he maybe this was an early attempt at determining a structure, which later on was
right, but it's an early flawed attempt, because we've already seen, for example, in the Torah with Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, that you just can't make up your own rituals to God. There it was even done in the right setting and so on. They just had, they weren't told to do it, so what are you doing? So you just can't go and decide, I'm going to make a house of Hashem, and I'm going to appoint a priest, and I'm going to start bringing sacrifices, and who told you this is going to work? Okay, now let's look at some of the details here. We've seen by Mika why his name is it. I should point out, by the way, as the Medrash, it says another thing that Mika was put into the bricks in Mitzrayim. Remember, there's a place where it says some say they put, same with the Tower of Babel, some say they would put people into the bricks that they're building in Egypt, you know, and crush them. And his word, his name is somehow related to that, where it says Shenit Mach Mach, the binyan, like he was smashed or crushed within one of the buildings they were building, and that's why he was called Mika. All right, so there are other reasons for his name as well. By the way, the Abravanel says the reason for the change in name is not what we suggested, because of the issue of now going with idolatry, but that when he was young, he was called Mikai Chayhu. When he was older, they called him Micha. By the way, the amount of silver that's used here, I can't believe anyone would remember this, 1,100. And anyone know where else that came up? So not that you could guess it, I would never know, just that the Mefarshim say that with Delilah, with Shimshon, that's the amount of money she asked for in order to seduce Shimshon and get him to tell what his strength was. Now, so what's the relationship? So you could just say, as some do say, it's just showing it's a large amount of money, a very large amount of money. Or you could say that somehow this is relating this to the last chapter, as opposed to what we just said, like it goes back to the whole beginning. No, maybe you're supposed to somehow think, well, didn't we just have that 1,100 just a little while ago? Yeah, so it's kind of like they're on top of each other to kind of maybe make that point. Saying the next verse, let's just say, Mahem, Ein Melech Yisrael, Ishei Ashar Beinav Yaseh. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man just did what he thought was fit in his eyes. First of all, have you ever heard that before? Have you ever heard that before? At the beginning of Shoftim, and this is almost like a constant, kind of refrain, right? That there was lawlessness, right? And everyone just did as they wanted to do. Then we have that whole discussion the very first week, if you recall, of Shoftim, about the idea of a Shofet. Did he have the status of a king or a semi-king to somehow come about to try to create some type of order and proper civility within the community? I present it this way. He goes ahead. He establishes this house of idols, let's say, in his house. He makes idols. He appoints a priest. Okay? Now, if you heard about that, what might you say or do? What might you say if you're a Jew? What might you do? Would you just say, well, right? Would you just say, you wouldn't say it's none of my business? It's not like someone not even he's eating not kosher. Okay, he teaches them. All right, he didn't take lulav and esrog. He didn't put on tefillin. Okay, all right, but he's making idols here, and he's in the name of Judaism. He's saying he's keeping his Hebrew name. That's ridiculous. You can't do that. Okay, you can't do that. So some say it means. So how come no one will see protested against this thing? Because in those days there's no king. Everything was lawlessness. There was really no structure for authority, and therefore so everyone did what they wanted to do. So he wants to build this, okay, let him build it. What's the big deal? Let's see what comes next. That says, Vayihi Na'ar mi Beit Lechem, this is verse 7, and there was a boy, or a young man, from the house Beit Lechem Yehuda, from Beit Lechem Yehuda. Now what does Beit Lechem mean? What does Beit Lechem mean? Where is that? What city? What is that?
In English, they call it Bethlehem.
Bethlehem, okay, Beit Lechem. But it's interesting that the Mefarshim say, I didn't know this and now we'll know, that wherever it says Beit Lechem Yehuda, it does not mean the Beit Lechem, the classical, we might think of Beit Lechem. Right. So this means just, it's a different Beit Lechem. Whenever it says Beit Lechem Yehuda, it's a different Beit Lechem. Okay, now all these questions are asked around this. Like they say, he comes from Beit Lechem Yehuda, Mimishpachat Yehuda, he comes from the family of Judah, the Hu Levi, but he's a Levi, the Hu Garsham, and he lives there. Now what's the difficulty? He comes from the tribe of Judah, and he's a Levi. Any difficulty with that? What's the difficulty?
Well, Could he have been living in one of the Iray Miklat?
Okay, but it says he's from the family of Judah. Okay, fine. You're already providing somewhat of an answer. I didn't see that answer, but it's an interesting thought. But most ask the question, they say, what do you mean? Yehuda is one tribe. Levi is another tribe. From Levi, you're not from Yehuda. From Yehuda, you're not from Levi. So what do you mean he's from a Yehuda family, and he's a Levi? Yehuda families aren't Levis. Levi'im are Levis. So how could this be? So the Gemara suggests, and some suggest, like you're saying, they don't say that particular case, but I don't know why not, you know, that he was really a Levi, but living in a city, you're saying, which was not, you know, let's say where you had a lot of, in the area of Yehuda, let's say, something like that. So that's what it means. Some kind of mention that. That's an interesting approach. Some say also that that the mother was from Yehuda, and the father was from Levi, so he's a Levi, but he also came from Yehuda. Now the Gemara rejects that, and others disagree with Baba Batra, because they say, well, since when do we go after the mothers? We don't always indicate the mother's tribe. Why here? Some say it was just the opposite, that he was really, the mother was from Levi, and the father was from Yehuda, so he's really from Beit Yehuda, right? He's really from Yehuda, but they're emphasizing he was a Levi, because we're going to see that in a second, that the Mikra is going to choose him like to serve in his temple. Okay, so anyway, there are different statements about this, but look what it says then: Vehu Levi, Vehu, what's it say, Garsham, and he lives there, right? And who Garsham?
Temporary.
Okay. So who Garsham, there's someone who want to say, maybe he was, like you say, just passing through, he's not really from there. Okay, anyway, that's what it says. So this guy's coming, all right, we're just getting out of Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud says, Vayomer lo Micha, Micha said to him, Shavai Madi, stay with me. Vayelo la'av u'l'kohen, Vayelo, and he'll be for him a father and a priest. A father can also mean a leader, like the Avot, like the patriarch. We had, if you remember, Ad Shekamti Devorah, Shekamti Aim B'Yisrael. Devorah described herself as a mother in Israel. And some say it doesn't just mean a mother, right? A lot of mothers. It means that she's a leader, like one of the Imahot, like she's one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael. So he says, I'll make you a father, a patriarch figure within my system here. Ula Kohen, and you'll be the priest. So apparently his son, who he appointed priest previously, this is even greater because this guy's a Levi. Oh, he's a Levi. He's really fit to serve in the temple. So let's take this Levi. Barafi atem lecha aseret kesef liyamim. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you a stipend, right? I'll pay you for it. So even if he thought, the Mefarshim say, like, well, what do you mean? I'm a Levi. Am I allowed to just go serve in this place? Oh, how much did you say? Oh, okay, yeah, I'll work it out. All right, I'll work it out. Okay, I'll be your Levi, or your Kohen, if you want me to be the Kohen. The Erech Begadim, and he gave him clothes, Imchayetcha, that I will help you live by, Vayelech HaLevi, and the Levi went with him. The Levi went along with it, and he says, okay, I will do this. Vayoel HaLevi LaShevet Et HaIsh. Now this either means, and the Levi decided, or, and the Levi swore that he would dwell with this man. It's interesting. Now he's not even called Mikra. Here he's just called for a moment anyway, HaIsh. And now I'll just dwell with the man. Vayihi HaNar Lo Be'achad MiBanav. And Ke'achad Mibanav, and the young man became like one of his own sons. He became close to him. He served in his temple. And okay, now yes.
I wonder if it parallels. It seems to be verbally that first half of the second Zibu by Yoel Alevi and Surat Daish. That was word for word when Moshe came to live with Yisrael. No,
exactly. Very good, Rabbi Berbov. I would not have known that, except that I saw a medrash on it. And that's very important. And Yoel HaLevi, right, it says, and the Levi swore, as Rabbi Berbov says correctly, that it says in Shemot Bet Kaf Aleph, Vayoel Moshe LaShevet HaIsh, And you're right, it's even the same, it's the same language, even to that degree. I just thought Vayoel was the same. But it says Vayoel Moshe, okay, here it says Vayoel HaLevi, well Moshe is a Levi, okay. La Shevet et Aish, the exact same language, Rabbi Berlow's pointing, the exact same language. Vayihi Hanar Lo Kiachad Mi Banav, and he would be like a son to him. And by Moshe it says, Vayitein et Tzipora Bito LeMoshe. So again, even there, it says, so, and he gave his daughter over to Moshe. Here he's taking in this other Levi and making him like a son to himself. Here Yitro's taking in Moshe, making him his son-in-law. It's unbelievable, the parallel now. I see even more than I saw it before. You're right. And especially that beginning language was exactly the same. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then we're going to go back to this in a moment. Go over to the last pasuk, Yud Gimel, in the chapter 13. Vayomer Micha atayadati ki etiv Hashem li ki ayali alevi lekohen. Micha says, now I know that God has been good to me. So apparently he does believe in God. Rather he believes in other gods besides our God, because especially academians tend to believe that in the ancient world, that when the Jews worshipped idols, it doesn't always mean they rejected God. They believed in God also. But there are a whole group of gods. Oh, sure, Hashem is one of those gods. That's how they reverted. They didn't give up on God. They said, you're one within the pantheon of gods. So having that type of view, so it seems like he has that approach. He's very happy. Oh, thanks, thank God. And he means Hashem, it says. He has done good for me by allowing a Levi who could be my kohen, not just my son. I'm not a Levi. This guy was meant to serve in the temple. Now look, I got everything. I'm legitimate. I can get my, my building approval. You know, I can get my, what else is it called? My permit. Thank you. I can get my permit for having a Beit Elohim now. I can get my permit because I have a real bona fide lady here who could serve in a temple. Okay? I'm going to be the first one, like maybe you said, and we're going to advertise this place, Micha's place. Come on over and pray like you never have before. Okay. The Micha Eliyahu quotes this exact verse, as Rabbi Berla pointed out, that connects this to Yitro. There's a medrash that says this. The Medrash says that when Moshe came, and you know, all the daughters were there, and everyone, Moshe wanted to marry Tzipora, and Yitro said, on one condition, the Medrash says, that the firstborn son, it's almost like Rumpelstiltskin or one of these, that the firstborn son is mine. That is to say, the firstborn son worships idols. Because Yitro, here's what it says, Yitro, it seems, was, we know, would eventually convert to Judaism. At the time it says, Ki adati ki gadol Hashem mikol Elohim, that Yitro knows, it says, that God is greater than all other gods. In other words, Yitro had gone through, we learn, according to the Medrash, all the gods. He was someone who really believed in the truth, and he tried out every possible religion. You may know people like that. But, you know, they tried out everything. They really believe they're seeking out the truth. He tried out everything, and he said, well, you know, from my experiences, okay, God is the greatest of all gods. It doesn't sound like necessarily he only believes in God yet. Okay? And at this point, maybe he wants his own grandson to also search out like he did. So he says, all right, listen. So the deal is that you can marry my daughter, but the first son goes to idolatry. We're going to train him as an idolater. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu told him, now what do you think he says? He said, okay, I can't do that. What do you mean? I'm going to bring my son to idolatry? I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. He says yes. Vayoel Moshe, and Moshe swore, the word yo can be swore, and Moshe agreed or Moshe swore that he would do it. Now why did he do that? So Mefarshim say that he believed that he would be able to talk his grandson out of it. In other words, okay. In other words, he almost took it that seriously. Yitro already had tried other things, and he really didn't believe in this so much. And so it's not, he's a little weak, his own father-in-law, the grandfather himself, who to be. And the son, so, you know, I'll take him on the right path, I'll teach him Torah. It'll counteract whatever Avodah Zarah he has. He'll see the truth. And again, Yitro is a man of truth, so when I teach him, he too will then see the truth, and this will never happen. So Moshe kind of just took it very lightly, and that's what occurred. Now the Michtam Eliyahu says that you see from this, and this the Bali Musar always do this, always say this, say that even the littlest thing can have the biggest effect. Okay, it's Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the greatest Yirat Shemayim, the fear, one who fears God more than anyone who ever lived, alright? So he says, he's in his mind, he's not going to do it, but still he said it. So it's in there. He said, I swear, yes, I will bring for Avodah Zarah. Okay, I'm like, you said it. So guess what? Your son was successful, he was not an Avodah Zarah. Gershom, his son Gershom, you hear this? Gershom Eliezer, right? Gershom was not an Avodah Zarah. He did not, but look, what is the name of this child? What is the name of this child? Do we have it yet? We're going to see that his name is, in fact, we will see later, Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. Okay? So that, no, Moshe was right. It was not successful trying to make Gershom, the firstborn, right, that was going to go to Avodah Zarah according to his oath. Yeah, Yitro wasn't successful. It didn't work out. He was a good Jew. Ah, but because there was a Shemitz, there was like a little stain, a little bit of it, it trickled down to his grandson. And his grandson, the son of Gershom, we'll see at the end, became an Oved Avodah Zarah. Okay, he became an idolater. He became an idolater, which the Michtam Eliyahu points out from the several incredible things. Number one, he says that someone can go off the derech, someone can go away from Judaism, no matter what stock they come from. Okay, again, I've said this many times to people who are parents whose children go away from Yiddishkeit, alright, that it's not necessarily your fault, okay? It could be it's totally not your fault. People have free will. People can choose. So in this case, so here you have it. The grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. The grandson. I mean, grandsons are usually pretty committed that he was my grandfather, you know, he stood for this, I'm committed to him, I love my grandfather. No, the grandson here goes off the path. Okay? It can happen to anyone. No one is free from becoming influenced by the Yetzer Hara, by the evil inclination, being taken away from Judaism. No one. No one. Absolutely no one.
So do you think that the reason why, I guess, Gershom was not affected by the oath that was because Zipporah, hurried to give him a bris?
Actually, that is an excellent point. From another perspective, I thought I've seen those who say that the reason that Zipporah had to circumcise Gershom herself, and that Moshe Rabbeinu did not do it, after all, we know he delayed and he was almost punished to be put to death as a result. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu circumcise his son? According to the Medrash we have quoted, it's because he had said he was going to give his son over to idolatry, and consequently he would not have circumcised him to allow him to come into the covenant. He would not have been allowed to do so in accordance with the vow that he took. And as a result, Zipporah, who saw that this was wrong for him to accept this upon himself, thereby took action and circumcised Gershom herself. Rav Dessler, he says something very clearly. I might have told you once a story, you may recall it, that people say they do things l'shem shemayim. You know, you break away l'shem shemayim, you do this l'shem shemayim, you're doing this for the sake of heaven, this is all for the sake of heaven. Okay? Rav Huttner, some of you may recall, Rabbi Kibble, Zichron Libracha, Rabbi Kibble, the head of the girls' high school here, once told me that in Memphis, someone had a baby, and they need to have a bris. So they had a moil in town, but for whatever reason, the person didn't want to use that moil. Maybe he thought he was more lenient than he needed to be, whatever. He didn't want to use that moil. So instead he brought a moil in from out of town. And a whole argument ensued, because there was one moil, he did all the bris, and how come was what's going on here, right? Whole argument ensued, and this guy who had the baby started screaming and telling people, listen, I'm doing this l'shem shemayim, whatever, this is a better moil, I'm doing l'shem shemayim, I'm doing for the sake of heaven, okay? For the sake of heaven, l'shem shemayim. We know Pirkei Avos says, whatever argument is for the sake of heaven will endure, whichever one is not, and based on finite type of things, will not endure. Okay, so he said this all over, and Rav Huttner heard, and he said, nonsense. He said, there is no machloket l'shem shemayim. There is no argument for the sake of heaven in our time. Now, what he meant to say is, right, just in a passionate way, yeah, everyone thinks they're doing everything l'shem shemayim. Everything, yeah, I have pure motives. I'm not at all being influenced by anything else, right? I just want to create a better place to worship. I just want whatever it is, that's all I want to do. And Rav Huna said it's nonsense, okay? More likely is very few people are really not influenced by something else. He did something to me. I want this kind of for more glory. I want this to, it'll be better. This will look better, or whatever it is. So Rav Dessler says, and Michal Meliyahu, he says, you see, he says, even Moshe Rabbeinu, who figured, I'm going to do this the same Shemayim. Okay, I'm going to swear, I'm going to marry his wife, and it's the way I have to go. The father-in-law wants it. I'll work it out. My intention will be totally for the sake of heaven here with this vow. I'm going to take Yitro away. I'm going to take the grandson away. There will be nothing but serving Hashem in the end. And he did it for Yitro, and he did it for Gershom. But he didn't realize, I guess, that, you see, but because you said that, and even your Shem Shemayim efforts, something trickled out that's not going to somehow be acceptable, and you can come up with a grandson who worships idolatry anyway.